things happen to people who listen to
Bug Radio. Put it on and leave it on.
The bugs send another meteor our way, but this time we're ready.
We have identified a new variant of coronavirus.
We're looking for a bug no one's ever seen before. Some kind of smart bug.
It reproduces in vast numbers. Has no ego, has no fear.
Cancel the kitchen scraps for lepers and orphans. No more merciful beheadings.
And call off Christmas.
In the new Tier 4 for England, there can be no mixing indoors with any other household, even at Christmas.
Look, if we're going to do this, it's just you and me. No stress buster mini breaks, no women. Just us, a pile of Chinese food and a couple of fuck-off spreadsheets.
No, wait! This is Christmas!
I am going to get home to my son.
I mean, look at the packed stations there.
Yeah, this was clearly totally irresponsible behaviour.
They can't tell me what to do with my Christmas, so I will take our own risks.
Put it on and leave it on.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
So this is it. Bug Radio Christmas. Is this the worst Christmas ever? If it's not, do you even want to hear about that at the moment? How do you make a sprig of evergreen look all frosty? And what would you give to bear hug your horrible Brexity uncle right now? We're up on iTunes, Spotify and Threads Radio. That's threadsradio.com. And you can sing us a carol on @BugRadio2020 on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a click. Give us a 5-star review. To drown myself in 15-year-old ginger wine, I'm joined as always by the ghost of Christmas yet to be, Mr. Kieran Monks-Kaufman. Are you having a nice Christmas?
Well, it's, I guess I might try and dress up my cats as family members to fill in the blanks. I think they might go for that. How's your one looking? Because you're not entirely locked off, right? You're allowed to see your mother?
Yeah, that's right. Whether I'll be able to get there is another thing, because there are 3,000 lorries at last count at the moment that are being held in Kent. But apparently there is going to be a deal this evening.
What, are they in the way of your intended perambulation route?
Well, basically I live in Canterbury, so hopefully I'll be able to get on the Rochester Road and then turn left. But apparently the really bad motorway is the M20 that goes from Dover straight to London through Folkestone, which doesn't really affect me, ideally. But Kent isn't a particularly big place, so I'm just hoping that he doesn't fuck this up.
So what the fuck is going on? Because ever since Brexit took centre stage, there's been this invocation of the gathering of lorries. I mean, we were told that it would be a kind of horseman of the apocalypse, that it's sort of foretold in the holy books. It's like when cows sit down and you know it's going to rain, that when the lorries begin to amass, that it spells doom and damnation. So why are all these lorries piling up quite near your residence?
Well, this is the thing. It's got now to do with Brexit. This, at the moment, is because they don't want the bug. They don't want the smart bug, the French. And who does, frankly?
So why is this happening? I mean, so we announced that our bug was more powerful than everyone else's bug in classic sort of British imperialist fashion. And then they took us at our word and they locked us off. If there's a nightclub known as The World, we've just been booted out with puke stains down our tuxedo.
And actually, it's quite touching. The only people they're going to let in are French nationals and lorry drivers, the true salt of the earth. And all these Brill Cream business go-getters can fucking do one.
Right. It's calling to mind that scene towards the end of Titanic when everybody's just sort of bobbing up and down in the ocean waiting to be rescued.
Apparently, there was a plan to try and give them all these kind of instant tests that the government probably got from some toff who probably made lots of money. And they don't work, apparently. I was talking to a friend today, and he reckons that those tests pick up roughly 6-10% of positive cases. I mean, they literally have a thing on the front of the box that says, by the way, don't use this if you actually want to know whether you've got the bug or not.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of that going around. I mean, a lot of fraudulent tests that do tend to announce their fraudulence. But so, yeah, it's straightforward, this case with the lorries. They're suspected of harboring the superbug, and Europe can't risk them coming in. And I just want to draw attention to Ravinder Singh, the leader of a local Kent Sikh group whose people are providing meals to all the truck drivers stranded due to the borders being closed. Thanks a lot, Ravinder. Good Christmas spirit there. Understand there's efforts to get the commerce flowing again. I mean, ultimately, commerce matters more than people anyway. But there's been tales that our supply chains are being imperiled. You know, that sort of plague staple images of empty shelves being circulated online.
I've not actually been to a supermarket. Have you been to a supermarket? Are they at it again?
I haven't been in a supermarket, I think, for about... quite recently, but it's a very local one, so I think it wouldn't be one of the...
So that wasn't looted?
No. I think that wouldn't be the first affected, but some sort of scandal mongerers have found that they're somewhere's out of cabbages and they're like screaming about it. I mean, how can we possibly go on?
Yeah.
But again, this throws a spotlight on the so-called just-in-time supply chains that keep our supermarkets going, which are coming under some pressure, but have been very resilient up till now. And most people, I guess, are probably over-resourced as they were planning to have Christmas with their families, or if they were going to be somewhere else, under-resourced. So yeah, it is an issue, but as far as we can tell, not disastrous on that front. But the sensation of being locked off, quarantined, disbarred in the macro sense that applies to our country also applies to us on a very local sense from our families. So, you know, we're all now consigned to our immediate realm. It's going to be a fucking Zoom Christmas in many cases. I mean, I wonder if Zoom is a Pyrrhic victory this year, because sure, they're inescapable, but now everyone just associates them with trauma and boredom.
Yeah,
and
people won't be able to wait to get a shot of it, I don't
think. Yeah, so you've got your platform, you've got your captive audience, much like Bug Radio in some ways, but you won't get away with this.
That might be a trouble for us. People might start to associate us with a horrible time. Maybe when people can go dancing again, the last thing they'll want to do is sit around listening to Bug Radio.
Well, no, but we're like the police and humanitarian services, as in, ideally, we wouldn't exist. You know, we would like for the situation to evolve beyond us. So people are going to have to be very stiff upper lip, very stoical about this, and probably, I don't know, get really pissed, dress up their cats in fancy outfits, things like that.
Also, the RSPCA presumably won't be able to get round to you without falling foul of the social distancing guidelines.
Yeah, if I want to torture my cat or make it look smarter, depending on how you look at it, then I'm going to get away with it, at least in the short term. One thing I wanted to raise is, how much compliance is there going to be? I mean, most of the people I've spoken to say they will begrudgingly adjust their plans because, you know, it seemed like a crazy idea to have a big get-together in the middle of this anyway, and now it's there's no fig leaf from the government. So
that's interesting, actually, because there are some people, I mean, you're basically being asked now, do you want to risk the health of your grandma? It's not normally where it's like, don't go to the shop or you might... Someone else's grandma. This is now about your
proverbial
grandma. So actually, the people who have decided, fuck it, I'm doing what I'm doing, it actually, there's a bit more on that, no?
Yeah. I mean, just anecdotally, there are some minority that will be following through on their plans and just sort of taking the hit and hoping for the best. And I'm not going to judge them. I mean, you don't know people's particular circumstances. I mean, they might be worried that they might not see people again. Some people are going out of their minds with loneliness and need human contact. And I mean, it's all very well trying to impose an inhuman situation, but obviously...
And spare a thought for some of the people who aren't even getting on with their parents.
Well, wouldn't that make it easier? You just ignore them.
Well, it depends, because then you can't even... The only people who you would usually... It's easy to form a bubble with are people who you don't get on with.
Yeah.
So that means you're more likely to be on your own, aren't you?
But I mean, for people that want to actively avoid their parents or anyone else, it is easier this year.
Mm. Or the mother-in-law.
Right. And also, is this going to be enforced? So one of the police chiefs said that this is unenforceable, basically, or at least like people visiting one another. And another one, there's a lot of them spouting off at this point. They want to feel important.
Yeah.
It's been saying that they're not going to put roadblocks up around London. So, yeah, thanks for that.
Cars are quite useful in a plague because you can travel without infecting anybody because you're in your own little fish tank. Presumably, they'd probably get a bit more joy out of patrolling train stations and asking people
Hello.
Who they are and where they're going.
What's going on here? Just sort of tapping their truncheons on their hats.
Yeah.
I mean, the sort of apocalypse bingo. I mean, one square would be on sort of roadblocks around major cities, like along with empty shelves in supermarkets.
What about the border on the tier four area? That's another idea. Like the main roads that come out of the tier four areas.
In the zombie apocalypse scenario, there's normally some vain effort to fence off the metropolis before the infected all get out.
Yeah.
I mean, so that might sort of alarm some people to see that sort of thing, trigger some bad associations. But yeah, I mean, so, I mean, on the enforcement point, there's been some noise about trying to be quite stern, along with contradictory noise about how most of it is unenforceable. The police chief in York says he's been handing out, what's the word, shocking amounts of fines. City dwellers pour into York.
Have they put them on commission? It didn't make clear in that article.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like with traffic wardens and referees giving out yellow cards, a lot of people associate, have a tradition on Christmas Eve having a piss up with pals, and I wonder if there will be efforts to continue that and whether or not these will be rigorously policed. So any thoughts from our listeners, please do pass those on.
Put it on and leave it on.
So we had a bit of a tiff yesterday, one of about four tiffs we've had over the last 20 years or so. We had an editorial meeting that turned sour. So I thought, hang on, how about we air our dirty laundry in public on the radio at Christmas? I've got a glass of Baileys. What have you got?
It's natural wine. It's British wine.
Wow, yeah. So all the ingredients are here for a truly poisonous festive rout. I can hear the Threads radio executives chewing their fingernails to the bone, but never fear, it's all water off a duck's ass now. And I won. So how serious is this new strain? And moreover, is it sometimes acceptable to lie to the public about the bug?
Well, these are deep questions, deep philosophy. And actually, Threads executives have asked me to introduce more friction and tension. Apparently, that's what sort of gets the online world going.
Well, fuck you. Your hat's shit.
When I heard about this superbug as the basis for cancelling Christmas, it struck me as tremendously convenient. I initially compared it to Saddam's chemical weapons in terms of a thin veneer of a justification. And it struck me that given that people could see from a mile off, or translate that into units of time, months off, the direction of travel for infections, that you didn't need some kind of mad bug, psycho,
smart bug,
WKD toting psycho bug to really smash up the gaff this time. You just needed the sort of linear direction that it was already following and was baked into all John Byrne Murdoch of the Financial Times' graphs. And I think that's a reasonable perspective, but also I am open to alternate views, and particularly as the evidence seems to show, you know, catastrophic buggery. I mean, we're seeing, but
we can see
the bug shooting up like a Halley's Comet on a clear night. I mean, in Havering, there are more infections than there are people. I mean, there's a shitload of bug.
I always thought it was true because the government did submit this claim to the WTO, who then presumably scrambled people to help. And so if the WTO came out at the other end of that and said, what are you talking about? There's no bug. The capital that they'd expend in the process of doing that would possibly be worse. But I did think, just imagine that you were a scientist on the SAGE panel, one of these SAGE panels, and one of your colleagues complained to you that the government wasn't listening to us because they'd rather listen to some weirdo with a bow tie and a copy of The Road to Serfdom in his briefcase who wanted to kill your grandma for one last face-ripping stock market rally. And they suggested that maybe a little lie, you know, a little white lie might be in order to get the PM's attention and the public's attention and save some lives. And assuming you would definitely get away with it as well, let's take that variable out. Are you in? Would you refuse to get in on that on principle. Mm.
I've been watching episodes of Frasier recently, and there was a philosophical discussion about whether there are good lies. And in one of them, what one of the examples was that Niles and Frasier had set off the sprinklers in their school and then blamed this bully who was then expelled and then went into a life of crime. And so the idea there, I suppose, was that there aren't good lies. I mean, given that so much of politics is about having a clear message that people can intuitively understand, that cuts through, as this government has been really effective in like the last general election and the Cummings people in the referendum. So what really matters more than honesty is ability to get people to do what you want to manage the pandemic. And it's been a useful, I thought, idea that people should act like they've got the bug, which is itself a form of dishonesty because most people don't have the bug.
Well, statistically,
except in Havering,
a lot of people who don't know they've got the bug have got the bug.
But would it not be more helpful to think, not only do I have the bug, but I've got this super infectious, crazy bug that's just leaping out of me and desperate to make friends? I mean, wouldn't that be responsible messaging from the authorities to make everybody, however true it is, think that they've got a super infectious bug? Isn't that a responsible and an effective way to try to manage it?
The only problem is that what immediately happened straight after this announcement of this new strain, what's it called, B117 or something?
I think it's Charles Bernard.
Yeah, the minute they've made this announcement, every fucker and his dog raced to the train station to get on the train, get infected, and then take their infection all over the country. Basically, my problem generally with this idea that the public should always be told the truth is that it's based on the idea that the public, as a whole, are rational. All the time during the kind of day-to-day, you know, ticking over of political life, lefties are always batting around these memes about, you know, the only people who are actually rational are, you know, economists and psychopaths or whatever. And there's like millions of like different variations on that theme. And then obviously every 4 years when the left loses the election, which it always does, you get these people sitting around going, I just can't understand why people didn't vote for our incredible transformative program. It's completely irrational. And you're saying, well, yeah, well, duh. If you think that the public basically aren't rational, and I'd happily include myself in that, by the way, I'm not suggesting that I'm the only rational one. I'm as irrational as they come. But if you know that the public are irrational, then there are lots of, you know, instances where they can't really be necessarily by default trusted with the truth. If you think that when they've got the truth, they might kill each other, for example.
Over this year, we've learned to be a bit skeptical when we see like a viral story about COVIDiots. And I mean, for any given person that might have had a train ticket to Leeds to see their folks, it's not irrational. It's just that what is sort of reasonable for one person on a scale aggregated spells disaster for us all. And another thing about that picture I thought was ironic was a lot of people captioned it with this sort of irresistible tagline of the last chopper out of Saigon, you know, to invoke, you know, the American chaotic withdrawal from Vietnam. But of course, Vietnam has managed this bug better than anyone. But another important point on this, which we raised on the emergency special, is it's very difficult to take what this government says at face value. I mean, they have never, ever stopped bullshitting us.
Yeah, I couldn't understand why people were getting so angry about this Priti Patel this morning on Sophie Ridge or something, just saying the government has been ahead of the curve on every decision relating to this pandemic. And they're all furious. And I just thought, hang on, what's the story here? Professional liar tells lie.
Yeah, it's just been bullshitting from beginning throughout forever. Mm. So, I mean, that naturally factors into how people absorb the messaging. And I'm surprised, have we not got to a point where, you know, we're totally reliant on people's own common sense, because no one with any critical thinking faculties is taking what they hear from above all that seriously? Is it the only reason why things are at all manageable? Well, and I mean, they're not manageable. I mean, the bug is one. But the only reason why it's not even worse than it is because people are applying their own standards to risk management rather than taking it from our feckless and irresponsible leaders.
Yeah, I don't listen to the government. I don't give a shit what tier I'm in. If the scientists tell me the bug's on the rampage, I'll stay at home. And that's more or less all I need.
You know who disagrees with that? Piers Corbyn, who has initiated a campaign of Gandhian civil disobedience, saying it is all of our duties to disobey these laws. And I think you're fed up with him, aren't you? I mean, he can eat shit, frankly.
Well, I mean, maybe that's how he got to sound like that.
Now, more than ever, we need...
Radio. Commence blathering.
There's been a whole hoo-ha about how bad the messaging's been.
We think it's important to stay sane.
Radio.
Baby, let's go!
When the fuck is this going to end?
Just trying to find something properly weird.
We need to find whatever it takes to get through this rotten fucking plague.
You ready?
Radio. We've been here before. About 102 years ago, when our forefathers were gifted not only World War I, but also the Spanish flu, which we are led to believe, although trust no one, killed tens of millions around the world, which was a real kick in the teeth for people that had just come through, you know, demoralizing and entirely pointless imperial dick-waving contest to no great end. So it's interesting to read a bit about how people were getting by in that period.
Yeah, it's people in the early 20th century apparently were quite used to epidemic diseases because they'd had polio and diphtheria. So they were generally a lot less touchy, apparently, about having their freedoms curtailed. There's a bit here in Esquire magazine that says public health departments wore badges and had police powers in those days. And if they didn't like the look of you, they could just quarantine you on an island or something. And nobody made a fuss. But I mean, the general impression I'm getting from these accounts is that the mood, despite all that, was generally quite good. I mean, unless your family had lost somebody in the war, obviously.
Well, they probably had. You probably lost the whole family. You probably weren't even there.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been capped quick. You know, I don't know one end of a howitzer from the other. I'm a lover, not a fighter. You know, if that. But the trouble was, there was immediately after this reasonably good-humoured Christmas, there was a third wave of the pandemic. So spare a thought for them, because we'll obviously be fine after Christmas, won't we?
I suppose it does remind you that modernity is kind of... it's sort of misleading, isn't it? Because like the vast majority of human history is people just sort of being in the mud somewhere, just being sort of hammered over the head with clubs by, you know, just a very small minority of club owners. So the era of the, I don't want to seem too dated here, what sort of games consoles do people use? Like, I don't know, like some, like the Nintendo Animal Crossing device.
And, Master System 2.
Yeah, I mean, so that's not representative, really. Most of history has been of, like, enormous and generally pointless human suffering, just, like, occasionally alleviated by a barn dance or whatever.
Yeah, just pain, occasional barn dance.
And so in this 1918 Christmas, after everyone died in the war, and then everyone who didn't die in the war died in this flu epidemic, they were still just getting on with it. And this historian I was reading says that most people didn't want to wear masks because it made them feel self-conscious and it was better to just die.
And also the shop owners thought it scared the other shoppers away. They actively tried to stop people from wearing masks when they came in the shop.
Stiff upper lip, yeah. King George V on Christmas, he took in a sleazy West End musical, one that provoked lots of complaints and the censors had to get involved in. So, you know, can't imagine getting up to that now, really.
No.
And there's official guidance suggesting that amorous young lads should not attempt seductions beneath mistletoe.
Well, it's poisonous, isn't it?
It was all a bit more casual, a bit less panic-stricken, perhaps in recognition that in those days life was cheap and your number could be up at any time.
Christmas probably wasn't a great deal of fun in the next war either, mainly because they had rationing. There were no Iceland prawn cocktail spreads and Mars bar pigs in blankets or whatever they have there. Sorry, that sounded quite snooty. I might have to cut that out. Although some people obviously lived in the country and kept chickens and other ruminants, which would do the job. And also there was a blackout, obviously, otherwise the Luftwaffe would have been able to see what they were doing. But apparently that didn't stop people from doing the place up. It says here, cut up strips of old newspaper made very effective paper chains. I mean, you know, each to his own. According to the Ministry of Food in 1940, a Christmassy sparkle is easy to add to sprigs of holly or evergreen for use on puddings. Dip your greenery in a strong solution of Epsom salts. When dry, it will be beautifully frosted. That's quite a good idea, actually. Might do that when if I ever get to my mum's.
Mm. This is cheering me up a bit. I mean, so there have been significantly shitter Christmases throughout history. I mean, I wonder how Christmas was during the Black Death, the bubonic plague. I imagine probably quite sort of uproarious, just because people just basically had a better relationship with death. They just didn't mind it. Just like if everyone died, you know, I guess that's, you know, whoever wasn't dead would just get on with it. And what's this about a Krampus? If you were bad this year, you must be grateful that because of social distancing rules, you won't be confronted with the Krampus, the Christmas devil who punishes miscreants. This occurs in Austria. So he's a half man, half goat figure who threatens to chase naughty people to hell. And he can appear in various guises late at night. It's pretty, you know, no matter what sort of Mourinho tactics you play, he can get through them.
We might as well have a little look at the most disappointing Christmas attractions ever. A few years ago, The Guardian compiled a dossier of the worst ever Christmas attractions. It's quite good. I remember news packages at the time about Lapland, or so-called Lapland, in 2008. A Christmas attraction so miserable that the organisers faced trial on charges of misleading advertising. The advertised magic tunnel of lights was some fairy lights hung over two small trees. The snow-covered nativity scene turned out to be a sheet of plywood in a muddy field, and three elves were accused of being involved in violent confrontations.
It's very Banksy.
Yeah. And the other one is the Santa's Grotto in 2012 in Abingdon in Oxfordshire. A family claims that the Santa who worked at this grotto was massively underweight. His civilian clothes were visible under his suit and his ridiculous fake beard was dangling sort of half off his chin. And he proceeded to tell the children that he wasn't real and then described the Sandy Hook massacre to them.
not appropriate.
You know. And I guess we should probably just end with a few words from the world's first annoying Christmas hipster, Oliver Cromwell. And he said, "We must treat the midwinter period with more solemn humiliation because it may call to remembrance our sins and the sins of our forefathers who have turned this feast, pretending the memory of Christ, into an extreme forgetfulness of him by giving liberty to carnal and sensual delights." I mean, what a cunt.
Oliver Cromwell, you're no better than Piers Corbyn.
Well, that's all, folks. Congratulations on making it this far. If you'd like to threaten us, you can do so concisely on Twitter. That's @BugRadio2020. Or if you'd like to go into some detail about the various pieces of torture equipment you'd like to use or the music you'd like playing in the background, you can email us on bugradio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. As always, wash your hands and piss off.